This recording is brought to you by Whitworth University. To hear additional programs, please visit www.whitworth.edu/podcast.
Good evening. I just claimed Whitworth as my new home. So I want to thank my president for that amazing introduction. I'm like, wow, who was that? I want to hear her. I'm like, wow. And too, gosh, the ministry team, Terry, thank you all for having me. An honor to be here. And I'm excited about what God is doing in and through you. As we come tonight, as we deal with this week, we will deal with all kinds of things about your call. Whatever that call is, all of us have experienced some invitation by God to go somewhere to do something, or to stay somewhere, or to be something. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I remember when I was first called to preach, some of you all are still shocked when you heard that I'm ordained, both National and Southern Baptist. They're still shocked too. They're like, what happened? How did that happen? Which is a funny thing, because I was actually raised that women did not preach. I was taught that. I had no problems with it. It's not anything I wanted to do. In fact, in my church, at St. Stephen's Baptist Church in Kansas City, Missouri, at 1414 Truman Road, my pastor was so liberal that if a woman said God was calling her to preach, he made her a missionary. Now, the catch to this missionariness is the fact that we didn't have a mission field. You just had Fifth Sunday, white dress, 3 o'clock. Amen. You showed up for service and you worship. And so I tried to be a missionary, especially in our church, historically black church. The other thing was, the two highest positions in the church for a woman was either to be the choir director or to be the pastor's wife. Well, the pastor's wife role was taken, as well as the choir director. So the only thing left for me was a mission field. So while in college, I did semester missions summer missions every summer. And my last year of college, my last semester, I did semester missions, and I tried. And so I accidentally ended up in seminary. Seriously, I did. Because I did missions, right? And so I was at Glorietta, and was asked at the last minute to speak for 5 minutes. And so I spoke, and when I stepped off the stage, the lady said, you want to go to seminary, we'll give you a job and a scholarship. Sound right to me. I had no idea what I was going to do, so I said, okay. So I was surprised when people kept asking me, was I going to be a preacher? And I kept thinking, why are they asking me that? You know, God has this way of knowing who you are before you know who you are, and then interrupting you, calling you to do something that you don't want to do anyway. Anybody know what I'm talking about? And so I ended up in seminary, and my peace got interrupted in a major way. And I kept trying to surrender to missions. And it's nothing like finally doing something you don't want to do, and then God tells you no. So all those times I sat in those church conferences and college conferences singing that song, Take My Life, Use Me, Lord. Y'all remember that song? I absolutely hate that song. I was like, no, Lord, no. This is what we're going to do. And you're going to sign it. Okay, so that's not how it works. And as we take a look at our calls, however you were called, this week the goal is just to remind you to revisit it every now and again, without a shame, without apology, without regret. And so tonight, our wonderful guest of honor is Moses. I love Moses. Moses is my friend. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But let me read some scriptures first. And I am reading from the Common English Bible. Some of my dear colleagues helped write it, you know, so I'm gaining points. Exodus 3, 1 through 12. Moses was taking care of the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, Midian's priest. He led his flock out to the edge of the desert, and he came to God's mountain called Horeb. And the Lord's messenger appeared to him in a flame of fire in the middle of a bush. And Moses saw that the bush was in flames, but it did not burn up. Then Moses said to himself, let me check out this amazing sight and find out why the bush isn't burning up. When the Lord saw that he was coming to look, God called him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. Then the Lord said, don't come any closer. Take off your sandals because you are standing on holy ground. He continued, I am the God of your father, Abraham, Isaac's God, and Jacob's God. Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. And then the Lord said, I've clearly seen my people oppressed in Egypt. I've heard their cry of injustice because of their slave masters. I know about their pain. I've come down to rescue them from the Egyptians, in order to take them out of that land and bring them to a good and broad land, a land that's full of flowing with milk and honey, a land, a place where the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites all live. Now the Israelites' cries of injustice have reached me. I've seen just how much the Egyptians have oppressed them. So get going. I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I to go to Pharaoh and to bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, you are amazing, Moses. You are the man. Don't you wish God would just say that? You are on the money. Okay, but God didn't even reply to that. But God says to Moses, I will be with you. And this will show you that I am the one who sent you. After you bring the people out of Egypt, you will come back here and worship God on this mountain. Moses, is not about you all the time. It's not about the people all the time. But it's about me who loves you and them both all the time. Here we find Moses in a really interesting situation. Because as you know, Moses had gotten into a bit of trouble and went into exile. Here, Moses is now being confronted by a God he never intended to encounter, in a place he never intended to encounter, in a way he never intended. Nobody daydreams, I can't wait to see God in that burning bush. We just tend not to expect God to show up in those ways. And yet, somehow, that's how God does it in each and every one of our lives. In a way that is inexplicable, but a way that is clear. And I have discovered in my short life, I've been 29 for a couple of years now, that the call tends to equal the intensity of the job. And so here you have Moses, who has made peace with his life, hopefully, out in a place hanging out. He got a good wife. He got a good job. He gets to talk to the animals, and all is well. And right in the middle of his oasis, God interrupts his peace with a burning bush. I love this because I know that if God had come to me with a burning bush, I would have tried to put out the fire. I don't have an inquisitive nature. I'm going to go, wow, that bush is burning and it's not consumed. I'm like, the bush is burning. Where's some water? And here you have Moses. I love the way God always encounters us in a way that's unique to us, because God knows our own personality. In my case, God interrupted my peace. In your case, you have your own story. But in Moses' case, God decides to show up in a burning bush. And as Moses goes closer, God says to him, take off your shoes, for the grounds in which you stand are holy ground. I got a problem with that. It's dirty under there. I like my shoes. And yet Moses does it. And then God says something that is hauntingly loving. I have heard the cries of my people. I see that they are in trouble, and I know their pain.
I have heard the cries of my people. I see that they are being oppressed, and I know their pain. I have discovered that whenever there's a call, God is calling us into something, out of something, but the call is always about a solution to a problem that's happening somewhere in the world. I was recently reading about Dietrich Bonhoeffer and how even in his own call, he was really born into a very affluent family. In fact, when he finally said that he wanted to spend his life studying theology, working in that area, the brother said, that sounds just like more boringness. Well, those are my words. He was more eloquent. I think that's dos is worth. But somehow Dietrich Bonhoeffer knew that was the call. And basically at that point when he's accepted it, it was a call to study philosophy, a call to study theology, not a call to save a people. Not a call to influence a group of people. Wonderful story how even in his studying, he got his PhD at like 21, so he's really still too young to be ordained. And so he does what any good German, he came to the United States to hang out in Harlem. That is just way cool, okay? Can you imagine being German in Harlem? And so he was at the Abyssinian Church with Adam Clayton Powell and all these wonderful revolutionaries. And somehow he discovered God and injustice. And somehow his spirituality transformed into something different, something new. That even when he went home and he got involved in the movement and he came back to the States, they begged him to stay. And he says, no, there's something more that compels me to go back. It is something about the call that when God calls you, you are the answer to some problem, whether it's in your church, in your life, in your community, in the world. And you must not negate that because you're tired. Now, I know some of you all are tired. I know some of you all are calling God to get that fire back, and you got names of some people you wanted to consume. You know, it's like, Lord, I don't want a non-fire fire. I want a real fire. And but what we must not forget as we deal with our struggle, our fatigue, our need for renewal, that God has called you to be a solution to a problem. And in those moments when you are at your worst, understand that sometimes it's not all about you. Here, 400 years. And I know if I were Moses, because God is still working on me, when God finally says to me, it's time for you to go say to people, I go, oh yeah, right now. Because you remember when Moses thought that he was called earlier and there was this fight going on and he kid. Do y'all read the Bible? I saw some puzzlement going, but he alone, he killed one of the Egyptians. You remember that? And some writers believe that that was him thinking that that was the beginning of the revolution and that he would lead that as being raised in Pharaoh's household. But it didn't turn out quite right because the next day when two of his brothers, the Hebrews, were fighting and he said, don't. And they said, oh, what you going to do? Kill us and hide us like you did the other. And Pharaoh found out. And if you read in your scriptures, Pharaoh got upset and had put a contract. I love my stories. Put a contract on Moses. Okay, he was going to kill him. And so that's how Moses ended up in the wilderness in the first place, filling this call of God, but not really. And so here God shows up. But one thing I have discovered, that whenever God has called you, if you will reflect on your life, there always has been a hint of something more. A hint. Of something more. If you take a look at Moses' life, even from the very beginning, when Moses was conceived and born and his mother looked up on him and saw that he was beautiful, he was fine, that he was amazing. And at that time, the Pharaoh in charge had put out a decree that any male sons had to be destroyed. You remember Shiphrah and Purah literally were told as midwives, if it's a girl, let it live. If it's a boy, let it die. And yet they had enough wherewithal and courage understanding their role in this, they would just, I love them. They were like, oops, it's a boy. Don't tell anybody. And so then when Pharaoh found out that they were letting the little boys get through, they were brilliant. They said, you know what, Mr. Pharaoh? See, the Hebrew women, they just have babies quicker. They pop them babies out. They're in college before we get there. And Pharaoh said, oh, okay, yeah. When God, there's always a hint of something more. And so when Moses was born, and then when Moses got of age, when she could no longer hide Moses, Moses' mother devised this plan. I'm going to put him in the wilderness. I'm going to put him in the river, the Nile River. Set his sister to watch. Isn't that amazing? Not a single alligator or parasite. With God, there's always a hint of something more. And then I love this script. Steven Spielberg could not have written this, where Moses cries on key while the Pharaoh's daughters, they're praying to the goddesses of fertility for a child. That's just way cool. Okay, Moses, you're up. Yeah. Okay, so the cool thing about it was, then Miriam or his sister runs up and says, you want somebody to look after that child? And she goes, sure, and I'll pay. How cool is that? That you get to raise your child who was supposed to be killed, you get to take care of her, and you get paid. Don't you just love God? If you look at your own lives, you all have your own stories of miracles and amazing things and hints of something more. And so Moses is raised in the palace, from a pauper to a prince. And yet he finds himself now in exile because he murders this one. He runs to exile, but then he finds himself hanging out with the Midian's priest. You all know that story? Literally, he was just hanging out, you know. I mean, he's the kind of guy at that point that our mother's daughters would tell our mothers would tell us, don't talk to them. Come on, they just got off a lockup. And yet, his daughters were being harassed by the others at the well. And Moses helped them out. And so Jethro was so pleased, he not only took him in, but then he gave him a daughter and made him part of the family. So here Moses, in exile, becomes a part of a family, tending sheep, dreaming. And God shows up with the burning bush and says, I have heard the cry of my people. I have seen their oppression. And I know their pain. And so Moses, I need you to go and lead them out. And this is where Moses says, okay, I've been waiting for this moment. Moses said, I am sorry. Who am I that I should go? Who am I that I should go? Because Moses began to read the script of those who told him that he was no longer any good. He had violated the rules. He is in exile. He is a prisoner. He has ruined his life. And yet God says, you're just the man for the job. How could this be? Because that's who God is. And as you read about the call in this call narrative, as you read about the other narratives, whether it's Jeremiah, Isaiah, Ezekiel, all of them had a resistance. All of them had a reluctance. But you don't understand. The gift of the reluctance is when you are reluctant, once you say yes, you tend to trust God more. Some of you all have been hurt by saying yes to God, but you must remember, God never answered Moses by saying, you're right, you're not good enough. God never said, you're wrong, you're good enough. God simply made the promise, I will be with you. And that's the only contract agreement you get when you answer the call and say yes, that God has promised to be with you. God never promises you that it's going to be easy. God never promised you that it's always going to be safe. God never promised you that it's always going to be fun. God's never promised you that we'll always be comfortable. God has not even promised that you will always feel his presence. He only promised. God only promised. The sovereign one, the Redeemer, only promised one thing. I will be with you. And then Moses hesitates and says, but. Then he says, but again. And God is so creative. Who does I say sent him? Just say, I am. Okay, God, you got another name? It doesn't matter. I'm with you. And then they do this wonderful thing. Okay, throw down your rod. Throw it down. It turns into a snake. There he would have lost me. Oh, gotta go. But God and God's amazing creativity, Moses, pick it up. Moses, you're stronger than even you realize. Moses reached down and picked it up and it turned into a rod. That's amazing. And then God says, now I got another one for you. Stick your hand in. Take it out. Stick it in. Take it out. Stick it in. Take it out. Leprosy, no. Leprosy, no. Leprosy, no. What I think is interesting about Moses is that he kept doing it. Okay, me? Ah! Okay. See, and even Moses, when he thought he was not enough, God was saying, but you're more than. And God promises this one thing. Because I have heard the cries of my people, I know their pain, I see their struggles. I have chosen to answer their prayers. And I have chosen you. Good, bad, otherwise. It's a call. It's a call out of something. It's a call from something. It's a call to something. It's a call for an answer. Not that you're equipped. Not that you're great, not that you're the man or the woman. It's a call to say, God, I trust you enough. I trust you enough that you will keep your promise to be. To be. And then to be with me. So as you deal with your call this week, just remember, God heard the cries, saw the pain, knew the pain, and chose you to be the solution to that problem. So it's not just all about you. But it's not just all about them. But it's all about a God who loves both you and them. The call knowing that there's always, as you look around, the hint